problems. We had to delay up until now at 12:30. Therefore, the meeting is officially opened now, and we've got two items that might take us quite time. And one of the items is the briefing by Transnet on the annual report and financial statement for the 2019-2020 financial year. Secondly, we have a point where we have to consider and adopt the budgetary review and recommendation report, which we call PRE. And then those are the key two items. However, the apologies that we have an apology from the minister who is held up in the cabinet session. And then also we have the deputy minister who is on leave and of course attended some of the minister-related classes. He will not be part of our session as usual. Therefore, unless there are either, I know Honorable Kashalia was said to have made an apology, will be joining us later. But those are the only people I've been informed about. If there are anyone, Secretary, can you quickly take us through?
Morning, Chair. As noted, the apology I've received is from Mr. Kachalia, who said he's got another meeting that is joining now. He'll only be able to join us after 11 o'clock. That's the only apology I received.
Okay. Then we have to start, Honourable Members. We have to start. But I know also that there was a technicality in relation to Transnet in terms of information. Transnet will be in a position to join us at 10 now that we've got that kind of a situation. I will suggest that we start with the second point, which is the PRR report. Let us ask the Secretary to take us through that particular report first, and then engage that report, hoping that by that time we'll be in a position to quickly get to the main item, which is Transnet financial report. Secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. The members will guide me. I've sent the final draft report this morning with enhanced recommendations. I'm not sure if the members want me to fly the report or they are looking at it.
Chairperson, if we could ask Disang to really fly the report, please.
Okay.
It's always an advantage to do that, yeah.
Yeah, honourable members, the first page of the report of the budgetary review recommendations report for 2020, number one, basically deals with the purpose of the report.
It's not showing. We are only seeing a list of your documents, not the actual report, Secretary.
You must just click. You have not clicked. You just put the report to the final version, and you have not clicked.
Okay. Is it visible now?
Yes.
Okay. page of the report, it's the introduction deals with the purpose of the Burr report, which is mandatory in terms of the legislation, which is the Amendment Procedures and Related Matters Act. 1.2 deals with the role of the and mandate of the committee. And then 1.3 deals with the description of the core functions of the Department of Public Enterprises as adopted in the strategic plan. 1.4, I'm not sure if the report that I'm moving is the one that is moving on your screen, Chai.
Yes, I hope so. Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
so,
yes, it's the one.
It's the one. So this method basically deals with how we are mandated as a portfolio committee to process budgetary review reports, which is first the engagement with the Auditor General of South Africa with regards to the outcomes of the annual reports for the department. And also it deals with, it basically looks at the financial performance of the department within the medium term period. So it basically states that within the method that we have engaged the AG, we've also engaged the department with regards to its performance. And then the outline of the content, which is 1.5, it deals with the overview of key relevant policy focus areas. It deals with issues of the financial performance recommendations of the committee of the last financial year. It also looks at the assessment of the financial performance within this particular financial year up to October, which is 6 months period. It also then look at the recommendations for the of the committee for the department moving forward. And then number two deals with an overview of the policy environment. I guess the members would have gone through that part. And then 2.1, it looks at key policy focus areas for the Department of Public Enterprises as informed by the National Development Plan. And then, and the medium-term strategic framework of government. And then we had to look at the summary of previous year recommendations. This is as per the outlined framework that we are given as Parliament to deal with recommendations of things. And then four deals with the. It looks at an overview and assessment of financial performance of the department within this financial year from 1st of April to the end of the second term, second quarter. So that's what this part is looking at. Some of the things that we are looking at is in terms of enhancing reforms to stabilize state-owned companies. So that there is an analysis of how the department has performed in terms of enhancing the governance of state-owned enterprises in terms of reforms. 4.2 deals with strengthening of oversight capacity within the Department of Public Enterprises. And then number 5 deals with the analysis of the revised budget for each program within the Department of Public Enterprises. That is per economic classification within the Department of Public Enterprises. So that table there, it looks at how the budget has been cut, which is deals with budget reduction, which is a 50% reduction for the budget of the Department of Public Enterprises. But it shows how each program has been affected. And then financial performance for 2019-20. It's within the it's in the table 2, which uses expenditure per program, and then table 3 deals with expenditure per economic classification. I think this is as per the expenditure of national estimate of national expenditure, and then there's also a narrative that is informed by that particular table. 5.1 deals with the Auditor General report. That the Auditor General has expressed an unqualified audit opinion with findings for the 2019-20 for DPE, which has regressed due to material misstatements identified on financial statements. And then in terms of the entities, we're looking at how the entities has performed over years, over the medium term. Hence, you will see it moving from 2018-19 up to 2021 because we're looking over the medium term. And then that is an analysis of how Alexco has been performing. And then 5.2.2, look at Danel. And then 5.2.3 looks at Alexco. It also reflects on if there's any capital injection and how it has been spent within each state-owned enterprises. 5.2.4 looks at Eskom. 5.2.5 looks at Transnet. And then 5.2.6 looks at South African Express Airways. 5.2.7 South African Airways. And then the concluding amends on concluding comments in terms of financial performance of state-owned enterprises and how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the entities. 6 looks at an overview and assessment of service delivery performance for each state-owned enterprises and the department. So service delivery performance for 2019-20. 6.2.1 looks at, in terms of the department, in terms of programs, administration, what were the objectives of the of that particular program, and whether it has the table for program and corporate management. What has been achieved, what has not been achieved, it's alluded to in that particular table. And then linking performance with budget for that particular program, which is the administration. And then program 2, in terms of the departmental performance, it looks at SOC governance, assurance, and performance. Same approach for that particular program. And then sub-program financial assessment and investment support. There's also a table to look at which objectives have been achieved and which ones have not been achieved. Program 3, business enhancement and industrialization. Same approach. The column shows which objectives have been achieved and which ones have not been achieved. And then in terms of the sub-program that deals with state energy and resources, we're looking at Eskom Limited in terms of the strategic objectives and what is achieved and what has not been achieved in terms of all state-owned enterprises that deals with energy. And then there's a sub-program that deals with defense and transport. There's also a narrative on how they have achieved in terms of their objectives. And then if I move to 6.3.3, it deals with research and economic modeling, which is a program within the department. So below that, we deal with the sub-programs in terms of how they have performed. That particular table, that's the same as the ones on top. And then 6.3 deals with concluding comments on service delivery performance. And then the service delivery and financial performance assessment, concluding remarks in terms of the service delivery and assessment performance. And then number 9 deals with reporting requests. There are no reporting requests relating to the department. And then 10 deals with the recommendations for this financial year. Can I, for these ones, I'm going to go quickly on them. The committee recommends that the Minister of Public Enterprises should ensure that shareholder compacts are concluded by the third quarter of the preceding year covered by the compact. Ensure that the accounting officer improves controls and systems to ensure the department achieves an unqualified audit outcome, and matters of emphasis from each year must be addressed within the subsequent year. Each ensure that SOCs protect jobs, particularly highly advanced technical skills, to advance the manufacturing capability of the state. SOCs should invest in labor-intensive infrastructure programs to create employment, ensure that the department follows through on cases open with South African Police Service on corruption allegations at Alexco, and that the recommendations of the Gobodo forensic investigation are implemented, ensure that the 14 billion allocated at SAA is used for the intended purpose, particularly the payment of severance packages and legal obligations, ensure that the restructuring of Eskom is completed within the set time frames, and maintenance of performance stations. negotiations is done on time, outline the impact of the Section 34 ministerial determination on ESCOM to the Committee on the Current Generation Ability of ESCOM, introduce specific targets for cost containment and revenue output generation in the shareholder compact, review SOC business model to enhance sustainability of the companies, which is revenue enhancement and cost containment, instruct the SOCs to invest in research and development to improve innovation and creativity, align remuneration performance and consequence management with remuneration guidelines, ensure adherence to the logical planning framework, enhance and streamline the DPE's internal processes to ensure rapid response and timeliest decision-making in the department, focus on capacitating core technical functions, develop and enhance technical skills, and ensure implementation of sound operational and systems engineering process, business processes to ensure effective technical oversight, ensure the implementation of the methodology and manner in which boards are implemented, are appointed to ensure independence and enable effective performance review with due consequence management. And that is a concluding remark. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Secretary. Can you ask anyone else, have the content advisor to add anything? Because I understand that the content advisor is supposed to be here. I'm seeing yes, there is Arnis here. Can he add or omit something before I give to the members to engage?
Well, thanks, Chair. Mine, I think, is to say that in each and every chapter that we were writing, including on entities, we've also included committee observations. So committee observations are throughout the table of, in each and every chapter, there are committee observations, where the committee observes in terms of what should be the recommendations. And so that's what I wanted to add. There's nothing more to add.
Thank you, Mr. Mnisi. Honorable members, I also just received a call from Honorable Mahotwe. She had to attend to an emergency. She logged in and then a few minutes down the line, she logged out. I just wanted the committee to be mindful of that thing. Honorable members, can you engage the report? Okay. When the whip and the Kumede, whip and Kumede, following each other.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Let's really welcome the work, and I think I must say to the content advisor and the team, well done. It's our first time we received such a huge report, and of course we've tried to compress it to 34 pages. As much as it is this elaborate, I think we also need to be careful about putting everything in the BRR so that way we're able to be focused specifically on matters of APP and strategic plan, and that way we are not found wanting and putting statements about this minister there, that minister there, but we are able to focus us on matters that we've been emphasizing from day one when we started the work of this committee, and that being the task of the mandate of this DPE. But furthermore, what's more important for me, it also would be able to, for us as a committee, to have some sort of a checklist to be able to see the challenges that we've been citing. So I feel that it's really, really prudent that as much as we might want to put everything in statements, please try to also next time concentrate us on the APPs and the step plans that we have. having, so that our performance of this department were able to see. Now, Chair, with that background that I just said, that will bring me to this perhaps amendments that I want to make. And some of them will give to the secretary in writing. However, let me just cite them for the purpose of record. So when we look into where it starts, I think I'm comfortable with it. Safe to go and quickly draw the attention of the content advisor to bulletin 2 on the overview of the policy environment, where there is where you start with OECD, the area of unemployment rate will be much higher, and so forth and so on. And so on. It goes on that paragraph until it ends, where it speaks about the low-skilled youth and migrants, as well as women, are paying the heaviest toll of the crisis. I really feel that this is really over-marking our work, and it doesn't really need to be there, because it reads that OECD area, the unemployment rate will be much higher than at the peak of the global financial crisis, but the extent of the shock of the labor market is much larger, despite a massive shift towards telework in all countries. And so you could hear where is it going. It becomes some sort of a statement about other areas, not that we don't align ourselves with issues that have been raised, but I don't feel that it belongs there. There's that, the same paragraph there, just at the end of it, a repetition again, and there is reference on this OECD area of unemployment would be much higher, so there is that repetition again. So if that can be just taken out, just the repetition part of it. Quickly, then I will go the same, what do you call it, is it number 2, yeah. Just going down there, the second last paragraph, and the last 3 lines, there is where it says, this will bring about the broadest collapse in per capita income since 1870 throughout the world. Tens of millions of workers have lost their jobs. Perhaps we might want to take out that reference, that tens of millions of workers have lost their jobs, South African unemployment, and this is what I'm trying to do. So if we can remove this, then the last paragraph there is where the second last line. It says exports South Africa has been hit negatively affected by both. So if you could just read, reliant on exports, South Africa has been negatively affected, then we're able to just remove that. And the second, another paragraph that comes in, it just matters where there's SOEs under the DPE, then we might just correct. I think just check. Let me not bore with you. I want to go to real content. So this matters will give to the attention of the secretary. There's lots of matters on the whole slide, okay, the whole paragraphs, all of them, and how they've been written. And I think there's things that need to be deleted and how we write them. So let me not bother you then. So let me go to number 3. Summary of previous year recommendations made by the committee. And I draw your attention on 3.1.5. It speaks about facilitating of the shareholder management deal. And then you duplicate it again in 3.1.11. So perhaps the 3.1.11 wants to delete it, because already the point you've made is 3.1.5 about the shareholder management deal. In 3.1.9, there's present quarterly progress reports, the committee reports. If we can just debate that present quarterly, we read present progress reports, the committee on the SOE restructuring, so that we remove report to the committee report. And if we can remove that, 3.1.11, like I said, is duplication. I've addressed that. 3.1.15 provides the committee with progress updates and show Alesco archives, blah, blah, blah. It is not possible to save Alesco. So it says it is not possible to save Alesco in its current form. For me, that's misrepresentation of what we've been getting and we've been interacting. I think as a committee, we have not made that conclusion. So, because it covers our remarks, so I feel that perhaps something that we auditor general are sufficiently addressed and progress report your committee on a regular basis. If we can just put that, because when you say quarterly, it means that AG will just be here with us forever. And 3.1.20, that second bulletin there, it starts with 3. If you can remove that 3, just a number, I think it's just a mistake. 3.1.22, Chairperson, just that paragraph, the second, the last two lines, it says that the provider committee with timeous updates and writing on development and events that could potentially adverse affect or the public. This information should be submitted to the committee within 2 working days. I really feel, Chairperson, we're really stretching it. I can imagine every day SOPs are really busy. So if we're saying that this committee would want important information within 2 days, the department, how will they going to be able to process this information, what needs to happen, what they need to communicate to the public, as well as things would have developed, because there are shareholders and so forth. So I feel that perhaps we should rather rephrase, not within 2 working days, or shortly after, rather say shortly after receiving the information or date of the incident. I think that becomes more prudent. Let me inform some text as well. I will leave them, I'll just leave them in writing. Just the, on the floor, the second last paragraph in the last line, it says the, at the same time, restricted economic activity has caused sharp declines in general revenue across government, especially. So I want to rephrase that, that they're able to say in general revenue across government, the special adjustment budget, so that we don't say the other way around. And I'm sure the crafters of the report will follow what I'm trying to bring to their attention. There's a 5.2.2 on the third paragraph, 1-2, yeah, the third paragraph, just there at the start, there's a repetition where it speaks to the Department of Public Enterprises that the NEL reported another loss of 1.7 billion. I think we've covered that in the body of the report. If that just can be removed because it's a repetition. And ESCOM, Chairperson, let's clarify the number. I think the report that we've been given, the second paragraph, it says to us, and I want to go to it because I've made my own notes and there's other notes. It says 480 billion. I don't think that's the truth. It's 480 billion. That's the right number. I want to see what is it that the research would have written to us so that we're able to correct the numbers correctly, then we are not misrepresenting as well what we've been reported to. My apologies. Okay, I've got it. There was email, then there's South Pole now. It goes to South Pole. Okay, I'm trying to get to that. So let me just leave it. But the right number is 480 billion. If they can look into it. Quickly, let me try to go to, I will leave other text ready if you can allow me to present to the secretary. I was trying to highlight some of the text in giving a huge report, what other areas that are very critical we could really do. Let me go to the recommendations that are very important. 10.1.5, ensure that SOCs protect jobs, in particular low skills, youth and women. Furthermore, SOEs should invest in labor-intensive infrastructure. You can see that. And even in 10.1.6, ensure that development mandates are aligned with health care systems, if that can be deleted. There's a matter on the what we have been allocated, rather FAA has been allocated. I'm trying to see at what number there's been 10.1.10. Okay, 10.1.10. All right. Ensure that the 10 billion allocated to SAA use is not 10 billion, it's 10.5 billion. I even went to look in the treasury notice. That's what it means. So if that can be corrected as well, so that we're not factual, because this goes to Parliament, we can't find ourselves saying things differently. But 10% overall and above, I thank the work, and from where I am, I'm very comfortable, and thank you so much for the report. So one accepts this report if only we can amend some of the text and you allow us to send you to the secretary to do the typo
questions and the other questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Honorable Gumede.
Chair, let's agree that the Honorable Shabalala has made a very substantial kind of contributions. Some of the things that she has mentioned are the things that I noted, but I just turned a blind eye on them. Chair, let's talk the procedure now, because it's not just the whether it's we effect the amendment or not. I would like to suggest that perhaps as a committee, because this is a formal meeting, as a committee, we mandate the whip to sit down with the content advisor and possibly the secretary and run the contributions that she has made. Secondly, I wish to suggest that at our next meeting, the report with amendments be brought back to the committee just for noting. It's not that it will be reconsidered, but for noting the amendments that were effected, as well as those amendments, if possible, they need to be highlighted so that each and everyone that in fact it either was not at the meeting or was present at the meeting, such amendments are quite visible. So I wish to recommend that, because we now want to, in a sense, I'm trying to say we cannot, if perhaps the report now and say we defer the report up until the amendments are properly factored in. That is my suggestion, Chair. You may put it otherwise, but one of the two is needed perhaps to happen. I'm then, Chair, if I may continue, that I wish to recommend that some of the recommendations that were made the previous year that have not been achieved. One way or the other, I'm not sure about the parliamentary procedure. One way or the other should have been lumped into this year's recommendations, because it looks as if they are being carried forward. They were not done. For us not to lose them, we need to always flag them. They need to be always there, so that at least the department does take care of the situation. I'm then covered, Chair, because I was a little bit worried that this 10.5, whether it's 10.5, it's 10, it's 14 this time around, it has been 10, the previous report that has been corrected. Let's just get the right figure, because we know we may be bombarded by other political parties, especially some other people that still argue this appropriation and say we keep on fluctuating this number so that we want to pocket this kind of money. So it will be important. I'm happy that the Honorable Shabalala has made mention of it. Chair, let's go. You know, I will have to reduce, Chair, my questions, understandably, that we may not have a person that may, in fact, begin to answer the questions, but I will just present the comments. I'm going to Dinelle now. Perhaps that will be my last comment, though I had prepared something like 10, 12 questions, but my last question now is, in 2018-19, the statement says we generated 3.8 billion. However, in that year, we've got a loss of 1.7, right? Which in fact is very much understandable. The following financial year, Dinel was appropriated 1.8. But the very same year, Dinel had a loss of 1.7. Then in fact, it's very much worrying. Because I wanted to ask if ever there was the minister and whoever that, what were the lessons learned when the first 1.7 got lost, I'll put it like that, because I still need a person who will unpack to me lost. What exactly does it mean? It could mean embezzled. It could mean irregular, it could mean whatever. I just need a specific. My interpretation is if I had 100 rand in my pocket and it got lost, it means it's anywhere because I can't see it, I can't account for it, so it just went missing. So whether this is the right interpretation, I don't know. But I'm worried, Chair, that for 2 consecutive years, Dinel would have, in fact, that 1.8 that was appropriated, it means it's just gone if we've got again 1.7 billion again, which is lost. The question that I was interested to know, we seem to be projecting 7 billion in 2022-2023. I'm not sure what could be the basis of this. What were our calculations that made us think that in 2022-23 we would in fact get the 7 billion? For me, what are those things that will happen, the things that we can't do now to get perhaps a better returns or revenue if we can project the 7 billion in 2022-23? Chair, let me wait there. Otherwise, I have prepared very good questions here, which we will in fact get an opportunity and ask them perhaps in the near future. Let me wait there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kumede. Honorable members, is there any other member that still wants to engage?
Yes, Chair. Honorable Mkwanazi.
Honorable Mkwanazi.
Thanks, Chair. Allow me not to open to switch on my video because of the network challenges. Greetings to the chairperson, the honourable members, and the officials from the committee. Honourable chairperson, firstly, I would really want to second Honourable Shabalala for acknowledging the work that has been done in the report. The report really is comprehensive. But Chair, I think I've been covered with some few recommendations and noting from Honorable Shabalala and of course Kumede, especially on 3.1 and 3.11. I think we need to make that to one sentence. Secondly, Chair, I want to emphasize on the issue of 3.14. The issue of irregular expenditure. I think I'm covered there based on the question that I asked in the last meeting to the department. But also 3.1.10, and the capacity of the implementation, the communication. But I want to couple with that, Chair, with 3.1, 21, and 22. I want to second Honorable Shabalala to say I think we need to take out that time frame to say after 2 days. It's really impossible. Let us redo that sentence to say after they've done the report. I think I'll be comfortable with that. On the recommendations on item 10, Chair, I'll be comfortable if we can adopt with recommendations 10.1.5. Let us correct that number to be 10.5 billion. And also on 5.2.4, the ESCOM number 450 versus 480. I'll be comfortable if we can correct that. But with those amendments, Chair, I want to move formally to this committee that let us adopt the report with the amendments, and the amendments will be factored in when we are reporting to the House. I move that we adopt the report. Thank you, Chairperson, for now.
Thank you, Honorable Mkwanazi. Okay. Honorable members, is there any person who opposed the adoption of the report with amendments that have been properly articulated here? It seems as if no. Then let us step down from this. Do you have anything to say, Secretary?
Not procedurally, we are in order. The report is adopted with amendments.
Yes, you have captured all the amendments that Chabalala raised.
Correctly so.
Okay. Thank you so much. Honorable members, that's the end of the engagement of the report. What we'll be doing now, we'll have no delays. We have to go straight to Transnet. Let me welcome the DG with his team from Transnet and the department. And it's unfortunate that we started without you guys. We were supposed to start at 9, but unfortunately it came clear that the information delayed to reach yourselves at the right time. Therefore, we have to reschedule the agenda or reshuffle the agenda and have the second part of the agenda, and then we deal with the other issue while we're waiting for you to arrive at 10. Therefore, I think we are very happy to see you with the chair of the council there, Dr. Popo Molefe. Huemore.
Morning, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, we are not going to be delaying anything. We will take this to the DG to introduce the executive from Transnet, including his team in the department. Director General?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the Chair of the Board of Transnet, honorable members, as well as the executive from Transnet. Chair, I'm accompanied by the head of the logistics unit in the department, Bangani, weekend, and without a waste of time, if I can ask, Chair, that we hand over to the Chair of the Board to present the annual report for 2019-22. So thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Chair. And good morning to honorable members of the committee and the team of the Department of Public Enterprises and the executive team of Transnet. Chairperson, at the outset, I'd like to tender my apology. I'm finding myself in a fix. I am a delegate at the investment conference convened by the president, and which is happening today. I wish to request that I be excused at 12 o'clock to be able to attend and be on time. Unfortunately, they have insisted that people should today attend physically. So I have to go there. We've got the GCE and the Chief Financial Officer of the company, and they would therefore deal with the matters germane to the annual report. But I just want to make short remarks, Chairperson, to say that during the last financial year, when the previous time we came to meet with the committee, we reported reasonable results, although those results were qualified. We have looked at the matters that led to the qualifications, and we found that they were traversing as far as 2011. So we continue to deal with the after effects of what is called the state capture, the broken systems of the time, and unfortunately, because we are one company, we have to take responsibility for whatever happened. We are engaging, and we did say so when we reported last time that we are engaging the Auditor General, the National Treasury, and the Department of Public Enterprises with a view to finding a methodology of ring-fencing all matters that relate to the last 10 years of the state capture. It remains a very complex matter to deal with. It includes issues that pertain to public finance management requirements, but a whole lot of other things that are of a technical nature, of the SCM, of procurement, of your supply development requirement, as per the instructions of National Treasury. So to find that solution is not really easy, but we continue to engage as late as, I think, 2 days ago. The team of Transnet met again with the Auditor General to look at this matter. And we do so, Chairperson, because Transnet will become attractive to investors only to the extent that it can demonstrate that it manages its finances prudently, that it gets rid of these qualifications based on the malfeasance of the last 10 years. But I must say that the weaknesses that happened in those years continue to dog the company, and we are continuing to deal with these matters. Of course, the group CEO and the CFO will deal with these matters. The other challenge that we continue to experience, Chairperson, is that often evidence before the Zondo Commission reveals things that then change the dynamics of the circumstances under which we are seeking solutions to the problems of the past. So constantly we are required to adapt our methodology in dealing with the challenges caused by the capture of those years. Perhaps that is why it becomes critical that we reach an agreement with the auditors, with National Treasury and the DPE, that we should ring fence all of those matters that happened during that period and deal with them separately, whilst we move forward from a clean slate as Transnet. So today, therefore, Chairperson, we will be reporting, but we report again under the cloud of technical processes, procedures, and PFMA requirements that have caused the auditors, again, to qualify our financial statement. But we hasten to say, Chairperson, that the qualification in no way suggests, does not in any way suggest that there is irregularities with respect to accounting by the executive management team and the board. It is these technical issues for which we don't have solution. And the GCE and the chief financial officer will show that because funds were committed to projects which ran over a period of time, to the extent that you continue to spend on those projects which are contracted, that expenditure until we have found a solution remain therefore irregular. That would include things like the 1064 locomotives. Until such a time that a settlement has been reached through the courts of South Africa and subsequent to engagement with the OEM, this will continue to be a feature of our financial report. But we do think that before the end of this financial year, we would have been able to reach a settlement on this big issue of the 1064. Chairperson, going forward, we remain committed to building Transnet, and we believe that in due course, Transnet should be able to pay a dividend to the shareholder. We're reporting again profit this year, but in the light of the uncertainties created by COVID-19 and of course the decline in the global economic performance, the tendency of course which we follow as Transnet is to preserve the cash that we have, but we assure the committee that we continue to work in a manner that we don't have to keep going to, we don't have to go to the shareholder for any bailout. We have not done so. The last time we were given guarantees was in 1999, and it related to an amount of a little over 3 billion. So that is all we have. So we continue, therefore, to rely on our balance sheet, and we will be looking at creative ways in which we could also increase our capacity to invest, particularly in infrastructure, in a manner that brings growth of the organization. To this extent, we would partner with the private sector. But central, of course, to our mandate, it is that we need to ensure that doing business in South Africa is not too costly. So let me stop there, Chairperson, because I know you don't. There's not much time. Just to say, those are just the initial remarks I want to make, and allow the GCE and the team to then take over from there.
Thank you, Dr. Popo Molefe.
DJ, I think it's supposed to be the CEO coming now.
Yeah, okay, you can hand over to the CEO from here. Yeah, Chairperson, if that is okay with you.
Yes. Okay. It's we are both Chairpersons. Dr. Pogomo is a Chairperson and I'm a Chairperson. Now, when did you refer to Chairperson? I don't know which Chairperson you're referring to. But the Chairperson of this session, CEO, over to you.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, good morning. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to present on Transnet Financials. Also would like to greet our Chairperson of the Board and the Board members who are present, Mr. Louis von Ziena and Ms. Dimakaso Machop-Soha, who's here, and Mpua Litlape as well, who is on the who is in this meeting, as well as Gratitude Rampa. Chair, we just a small, there are quite a few executives as well who are on the call, and we will make the presentation basically as a twosome, myself and our CFO, Nonkululeko Dlamini. I would appreciate, Chair, getting some guidance from you in terms of how long the presentation is, and weekend if I could please ask if you could set up the presentation. I'd just like to have a sense of the timing that we have to available, Honorable Chair, for the presentation.
Okay, under normal circumstances, we give Transnet or any presenter an hour, including the remarks made by the Chairperson are inclusive of the time you have.
Okay.
But we, of course, I've seen the report is a bit longer. Perhaps I will give you an advantage of an extra 5-10 minutes. Yeah.
Okay.
Is there somebody who's calling my name?
Is the secretary of the committee?
Yes, sir.
It's Disang.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that I have made Ms. Davi and Ms. Ayanda Shezi co-hosts for the meeting to enable them to share the presentation and control it at their pace. I'm not sure if there's anybody else who would be sharing the presentation so that I can make him a co-host.
Okay. Who else having? Tisam. Muchumi.
Chair?
Yeah, what are you suggesting? Yeah.
No, I have, they are able to share, Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Continue. CEO.
Chair, I just want to make sure that you can see the presentation.
I can see the presentation.
Okay, so how do I page down? Okay. Okay. Sorry, Chair. Honorable Chair, I was still trying to sort out how to work this.
Okay.
So, I'm sort of in my mind. As they would say. Okay, Chair, we're going to try and make it in 45 minutes so that we take an hour, and I'd also like to give the board members who are on the call some time to be able to make some commentary if they so wish, Chair. So if the presentation is organized in a fashion, I'm really worried. I'm not sure that it's paged down because I'm using a PDF. Can you look at it? Can you see it? Okay. So it's divided in a couple of headings that we will try to cover over the next hour as fully as we possibly can. If I just go to the first slide number 3, which presents the group ESCO, we are now since July, I think, or September, we are fully the complete team at the executive level. You will be meeting Nonkululeko Dlamini, and I imagine Chair over the next couple of months you will be able to meet the rest of the executive. We have, however, also had another presentation where we were joined by the CEO of TFR, Zagela Mzimana, as well as the CEO of Port Terminal, Mr. Velile Dube. We have on various occasions had Dr. Andrew Shaw, who is our Chief of Strategy. Brian Cuomo is our Chief Audit Executive. Some of these functions, we will talk to their significance and importance in terms of ensuring assurance inside Transnet. Then there's Yoli Sagani, who is our Chief Business Development Officer, as well as Kyle Singema. Singema is the Chief of People in Transnet. Advocate Sandra Kutsia, who is on this call, will help support in answering some of the questions that relate to the PSMA, is our Chief Legal Officer. Mr. Pandelani Munyai is our Chief Information Officer, and Mr. Vulena Makula is our Chief Procurement Officer. If I go to the rest of the ODs, Mr. Kapei Mushaka is the Chief Executive of Properties, and Michelle Phillips is the CEO for Pipeline. Mr. Fethi Silinga is the last entrant actually to the team as the CEO of Transnet National Port Authority, and then Ralph North is the CEO of Transnet Engineering. So there's actually quite a lot of work being done in reviewing all of our ODs and starting to develop them into a clear standalone, nearly separate operations actually. So that we can start to understand where we make money, where we make losses. The next slides, Chair, start to look at Transnet in terms of operations, operational performance, as well as the developmental mandate. Ms. Ayanda Shezi is on the call, and I'll ask her to talk a little bit more when we talk about the developmental mandate and as far as it relates to Kilo Pepper train. So the impact of Transnet, we try to measure it in 6 areas. It's the value that we should be generating to the economy. So our mandate is around reducing the cost of logistics in South Africa. That's at the heart. And the core argument is that if we were reducing the cost of logistics, we should be having a positive impact on the economy because we enable competitiveness of industry, and we enable also the ability for South Africa to be able to export. In driving cost competitiveness of in logistics, we also have the impact of bringing in additional members companies onto the system. We also are supposed to have an impact on the private sector to leverage their investments in as far as their operations and infrastructure, rolling stock and operations. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the challenges that this starts to introduce going forward. We are almost done with our strategy process, and the core issue which we've all acknowledged is that we've hardly been able to successfully have a partnership that we've been able to close. We do start the process and haven't been able to do very well in terms of closing them. So we're getting to understand what are the causes of some of those challenges. We must also integrate the South African economy regionally and globally. Obviously, as a logistics company, it's access to the international market, and I think in the strategy going forward, you will hear a lot more of some of the ideas that we have around delivering, particularly on the responsibility to link the South African economy globally, but also to make sure that the shipping leg of our logistics, which is actually one of the bigger costs that we have to face in South Africa, is reduced to the maximum extent possible. There's no getting away from the fact that South Africa is quite far from its markets. Chair, the other area which we are supposed to make to directly deliver to is the migration of from road to rail. It's a process well underway, and a lot of it ties up with getting to an understanding of what are the true costs of operations on the rail side, as well as what is the true cost of the rail and the maintaining the infrastructure itself. On customers, the intention is to provide a predictable and reliable service so that customers are able to contract us in the full knowledge that within a designated number of hours, we depart from their facilities and we arrive where we intend, where the package or the cargo is intended to be dropped. That's an area that we do need to do a hell of a lot of work. Some of the work, though, relates to dealing with the issue of cable theft on the one hand, and you'll hear that the tendency is to over-talk about TFR, but TFR is about 55 to 60% of our volumes and our revenue at the end of the day, and so we do tend to focus on it. The issues, though, of which are just operational issues, backlog in maintenance, are issues that sees us, the CEO of TFR and the team there, are seized with having to address. But one thing we can say for sure, Transnet's problem is not a demand problem. It's a supply problem. And will also indicate some of the drivers of some of our supply constraints. On the socioeconomic side, we're supposed to have a positive impact socially and economically in the areas in which we operate. We are trying to do much better in that area. But a large chunk of our drive is to actually leverage the very assets that we have, such as our clinic, the Pilo Pepper train, and our training centers, as well as our procurement, actually. So we've recently, and this we should be able to report to in the next financial year, have started looking at designating some of our procurement for some of the more secondary, smaller towns where our operations will cut, where we're trying to make sure that some procurement is, a percentage of our procurement stays in that locality, and avoid a situation where virtually everything is monopolized by companies which come either from the capital cities in each of the provinces, or sometimes worse still, that come from three or four cities which are in the bigger provinces. So quite a lot of activity is being done in that area. But we'll report, and I think in the coming year, we might have much more interesting stories about how we've been able to leverage our assets for social economic benefit. What for our suppliers, what we're trying to do is to ensure that our procurement is transparent. We also want to ensure that even the evaluation systems and processes that we undertake are actually beyond reproach and, frankly, credible and auditable. It's an area of ongoing concern. Talk later in the presentation about some of the work that we're doing, because unfortunately, because of some of the issues we found in that area, some of the high-value tenders we had, we've basically had to go for a non-award, and in certain instances have had to undertake investigations. And in one or two, we've had to refer them to the SIU. However, we are cleaning up in that area, and in the next 6 months, we will be coming out with an indication of the new model by which we will be procuring. In the immediate, we have a project to try and get all of our less than 2 million procurement automated. That would help with transparency. It also would help with the market also having a clear indication of what it is that we plan to buy. However, it would be remiss of me to not indicate that one of the core challenges that we have to deal with in procurement is just the phenomenal bureaucracy that's attached with having to comply with the PSMA, as well as the approvals that we require from the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. I think it's a conversation worth having, because we have very clear examples where it is genuinely problematic for some of our operations. But I'm happy to take some questions on that when we get to that point, Chair. As an employer, Transnet, and for our employees, we want to be an employer of choice. We want to be the kind of employer where it's a safe workplace and people can work with complete integrity, and that we can all of us be authentically ourselves. We've got quite a lot of programs to ensure that we deal with bullying, and we also delay the organization, because we would argue that some of the challenges that have arisen in the recent past is that we've created an organization which is not very receptive to voices that come from the lower levels in the organization. So an urgent project that all of the ODs are running with is a scheme for delayering their operations. We borrow quite a lot, as you would know, both domestically, and we have bonds which are listed on the JSE. So there are quite stringent requirements from us on the governance side in terms of transparency, because to all intents and purposes, we are a listed entity by virtue of the fact that we have listed instruments on the capital markets. We want to remain a reliable partner for the financial sector, who is clear and is a credible borrower who's able to make all of their repayments. And then to the shareholder, we've made the big promise that soon we see ourselves starting to pay dividends. However, first of all, is to deal with our balance sheet and also ensure that we start generating sustainable financial returns, that actually we are compliant and actually are just generally a good corporate citizen, as would be expected of an entity owned by the state. On the shareholder compact, in terms of performance, we've not done so marvelously if you look at just the number. We have 74 KPIs, and we've been able to achieve 28 of these KPIs. But, Chair, I'd like to just focus on the areas that we've done pretty well. I mean, we could have done better. There's no getting away from that. Is in the area of financial sustainability, the EBITDA margin is in line with target, but we're not entirely happy with how we've achieved that. There's been too much cost containment, and the risk sometimes with cost containment is that you cut costs in areas which you should be promoting, spending money so that you are able to move the volumes that are necessary to move. We are looking quite seriously at ROIC, which is return on invested capital, which should be the performance indicator of greatest interest to the shareholder, because it says that for the investment, the money that they invest is their return, and that we really do badly on. And we're reviewing, but also we need to have greater stability, because that is the we should be achieving a return which is greater than our cost of capital. The other area where we do pretty well is on the socioeconomic and the developmental impact that we have. We're not too bad as far as that's concerned, but definitely could do better in some of those areas. The other area which we'll be paying a lot more attention going forward is around industrialization. We've been, and you'll see if you look at our balance, our triple B scorecard, on industrialization, we do very well. We achieve a level 2 BEE, which means that we're spending the minimum that we're supposed to spend on skills development, on enterprise and supplier development. However, we think that we could do much better in terms of making some of our R&D available to some of our partners, both large and small, who are South Africans, who might be able to better develop the products that we procure. But there are issues in this area, and some of it is tied to procurement policy and how we procure, and our ability to have long-term strategic relationships with some of our local suppliers so that they can be able to invest in capacity. The areas that we've really done badly and we're really working hard to drive performance is this issue of capacity creation and strategic initiatives. On Operation Pakisa, not done well at all, partly because some of the Operation Pakisa required private sector participation. And unfortunately, when you do the NPVs for some of the investments, they were negative. And so nobody in the private sector was really interested in some of them. And then we've also not, and this is the area that I've already indicated, Chair, Honorable Chair, where we need to review how we do our private sector participation and our models. And by the end of this financial year, the intention is to have at least one that we've successfully issued and have a clear process to closure. Because what we're finding is that what we were doing is issuing a tender, but when we issued the tender, we had not closed the process from beginning to end and had a clear sense of how we'd be able to get to financial close on the other side. And so financial close was taking 2 years and whatever. And so conditions precedent were just being missed completely by both sides. It's not always been the partners, it's also ourselves. And then the area of operational excellence across the board, from TFR to TPT, it's the fact that we've missed most of our performance KPIs. And some of it is as a result that we haven't done maintenance that we should have done. We also have a real problem that a lot of our locals have been parked, not only as a result of 1064, but also just the time that it takes to do the procurement and the approval for the procurement. But an area that we are working on quite aggressively, Chair, and it's the same even on the port. Chair, if I just briefly go through the performance by each of the ODs, I'm a bit worried about the financials, actually, given the time that we have. I'm going to go a bit faster on this, Honourable Chair. If members want us to come back we will come back. So in the area of coal, we've seen marginal increases in export coal and iron ore. We've seen quite a significant reduction in the number of speed restrictions that we had on the system, and that says that we've actually invested, we've done quite a bit of maintenance across the system. Some of the cycles, and the cycle time just refers to from pit to port, the time that it's taking us to move the locals, the rolling stock is starting to improve, and so there's some really nice initiatives that are coming out of that. However, in the last financial year, as a result of just generally the state of the global economy, there were some demand constraints, and these we saw in particular towards the end, in the fourth quarter, as we were going towards the shutdowns around the world, demand sort of like seriously fell off. We've also had a problem, as indicated, with the local undersupply, and that really was partly because of the 1064s, which then meant that spares were difficult to get. And also we needed to get to a point where we had a clear sense of what's the way forward with regard to all of the issues that we had remaining. Weather-related disruptions are quite have been an increasing problem that we have to deal with, is that the sea days, and this is just literally, as the committee, I imagine that you would have knowledge of the Alexco and its sea days. We have some sort of a sea day problem ourselves, is that we're finding that with high winds, in more often than not, right up to Durban, we start having challenges in terms of operations. However, this is an area, though, that TNPA is helping us by driving procurement so that we get equipment that should be able to steady the vessels when they are docked. In the side of transit engineering, unfortunately, virtually none of the demand that had been expected arose. And so we continue there to actually run with a huge staff count and not enough business. It's a real challenge, and we have to deal with that. I mean, we can't continue to live on hope on that one. However, we were able to manufacture and deliver 400 wagons. There are efforts to look at cost optimization. Unfortunately, where there was an expectation of increased manufacturing, we increased the number of people. We hired for manufacturing quite substantially. And the unfortunate situation is that you don't easily shift a person from being a manufacturing person to being a maintenance. And it takes about a year for the training to happen, to move from one area to the other. But we've had some successes. The TAO is now, which is the, what's it called? Trans-Africa. Yes, the Trans-Africa locomotive is now in testing phase. So finally it's done, and I think we are working towards the third one. And if that works, and we're now talking also to the artists, to the technology people inside CFR to see all of the areas in which we might be able to deploy that TAO. So some nice progress happening there. In Transnet, National Port Authority, we have been able to finally, you know, close off on, we've got higher tugboat availability, some challenges in terms of getting to the last tugboat or so, and that's unfortunately one of those procurement issues that we have to deal with. In Durban and Richards Bay, we've got new helicopters that help to deal, especially when we have bad sea days, to ensure that the pilots are able to get onto the vessels so that they can navigate them through to the port. We've seen lower revenues, though, but more than that, is the biggest challenge in this area has been the delay in the delivery of capital investments. And that's an area that is a critical issue that the new leadership has to deal with immediately. However, in the National Port Authority space, there are some seriously great opportunities that we see going forward, especially with the new investments around Nuka, which are around it being a hub for LNG. And we've already started having, or progressing at least, the conversations with the Premier of the Northern Cape around the port in Bukhubai. Transit port terminals, unfortunately, over the years, we underinvested in new equipment, and we're slowly catching up. And so some days our productivity is good and some days our productivity is bad. And at this point, we've really had to count on the relationship between management and operators to drive and drive performance. We're starting to do better, but definitely the issue of equipment at the port is a big issue. Transnet port terminals have started engaging with Transnet Engineering to see how Transnet Engineering could help with the maintenance and repair of all of their port equipment, which would ensure greater availability for the port, and also should actually see us performing much better in some of these areas. But the issue of shortage of equipment is going to remain, and unfortunately the balance sheet is not able to cover all of our requirements, so we will be approaching the shareholder and the board with some ideas that we have around increasing private sector participation in this area. And then on the Transnet pipelines board, honorable members, you would be seeing in the media that if there's a thing that is chasing us like crazy, between TFR and pipelines, we have huge problems with theft. Cable theft in the space of TFR, especially in the Gauteng area, as they've moved from FASA and they've started hitting us quite badly. And then on the pipeline, we've had a phenomenal increase in the number of incidents. And Honorable Chair, it would be good at some point to actually just have a presentation from the CEO of Pipelines and just to explain, because for the longest time, this is like almost was a dead area and nothing was happening. We've actually started having engagements also with the Department of Mineral Resources to just understand what changed on the regulatory side, which suddenly caused the shift. And we think the increase in the number of independent wholesalers must have something to do with this, number one. And number two, it is always interesting for us that the commodity that gets stolen is only diesel. As you know, the pipeline is a multi-product pipeline. It moves diesel, jet fuel, and it also moves petrol. They never steal the others. They always steal diesel. Now, we accept the fact that there are clearly some leakages on our side on information that we need to deal with. But to be frank, it's not only on our side as well. It's a range of individuals get to know what products we are moving. So we're starting to talk to the industry. We've also strengthened quite significantly our security unit so that we would be able to deal with some of these challenges that we have on this area. At some point, we're happy to make presentations on this because we are starting to definitely make inroads. We are seeing a lot more arrests, and what we've done is strengthen our investigative capacity so that we can be able to provide additional support to our law enforcement agencies as well. With regards to COVID, Chair, Honourable Chair, we were lucky in that, in the sense that by in January, and I really think it's thanks to the fact that also on our board we've got a couple of board members who were getting briefings from the financial sector and other sectors who were ahead of the curve, and we started reading their reports, that we set up the response team faster, so that by the time the lockdown happened, and when we had to move to 50% of our operations, we actually had quite a strong command center that we had set up. It was not easy, and it's many months later now that we've all forgotten to some extent some of the difficulties that we've had. But members will remember with the citrus season that we had some really rough days. And interestingly, the port operations were so badly hit that from a value chain perspective, I think we all started to finally understand that actually, if you look at the logistics system, we are really seriously dependent on what happens at the port. Because if the ports are not moving cargo in or out, the whole system blocks. And when the system blocks, frankly, your economy is not shifting as well. But as we've indicated and members would have seen, we've had wonderful response from our teams. We had people moving from Durban and going to work and help us in Cape Town. That was fantastic. I mean, it was truly a moving experience to watch that because people were leaving their safe homes and going to the Eastern Cape and Cape Town. However, now that we are worrying about the second phase, we've re-installed our protocols. We kept basically with the precautionary protocols and have social distancing. We've kept to lower numbers inside the offices to ensure that there isn't infection rate. In the coming month, I think we soon will be releasing our first 6 month report, and in that one you'll be able to see how we performed for the first 6 months. To be honest, if there hadn't been the commodities that we are moving, we would have been in real deep trouble, because our operations and our volumes were pretty steady on the back of commodity flows. But in the hard lockdown, where everybody was at 50%, you see that in the numbers coming down significantly on revenue. In the period of the lockdown, we tried our best to make sure that we had we used peel and paper trays. We made donations where we could. For PPE in the areas and mostly it was the rural communities that we supported, NGOs with food parcels, with PPE. We also made sure to look after all of our pensioners at the same time by providing them special care packs when we went into the hard lockdown. The trains were deployed virtually right across the system. Chair, if you don't mind, I'm going to fast go through this one because I want to give Nosulego time to go through the financials. Just briefly, the headcount stays the same at about 56,000 individuals. We've got, we had 238 young professionals in training. Unfortunately, this year, in this calendar year, we've had a smaller number because of the lockdown. But definitely next year we should be doing a lot more interesting things around training actually in Transnet, and we'll come back with that. On our representation, we still do very well. We are also, in terms of, I've indicated that on community development, we've continued to provide support across the board. Our cross-regional revenue is not as good as we'd like, but you know, 166 million is something. It's the beginning. Because the real truth about the regional market is that the ability of our customer and always our partner on the continent is either a state utility or government. Their balance sheets are more challenged than what ours are. on health and safety, we've kept below the number for disabling injury frequency rate, but we are introducing other measures so that we have a much tighter control on health and safety. We unfortunately had 6 employees die over this period. We had about 109 public fatalities, and so the issue of level crossing is an issue that we are focused on. We need to find, and frankly, that we can only solve in partnership, so with local government as well as provincial government around safety. And then two, at the end of the financial, by the 29th of September, we had had 41 employees die as a result of COVID-related complications. And since we are, I think, at 46, I'll get the exact number, because we've since had increases. And also, unfortunately, since that date, we've also had a board member pass on as well. Chair, if I may, can I allow Nonkululeko to start on the financials, because the rest of the other slides were just the details of the performance in various areas. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Portia. Honourable members and the Honourable Chair of the Committee, our Board Chair and the Board members on the call, thank you for the moment. I will go through a few slides just to give some highlights on our financial statements for the year ended 31st March 2020. And I suppose my numbers are fairly fixed at a point in time, while the Group Chief Executive would have commented on some of the activities post these numbers coming out. Chair, we did submit the financials, I think it was on the 23rd of October, the full set, but we will just focus on the highlights, and I will start on slide number 15. Just on the revenue line, we saw a growth of 1.3% to 75.1 billion rand, which is an indication of a steady business that Transnet has, even in the context of the economic conditions that we faced, as articulated by the GCE. We did see that a combination of the tariffs, basically driven by the kind of volumes that we moved, versus the growth in volumes, indicates that largely our increase in revenue was driven by the increase in the tariffs. Because our volumes actually overall declined by about 2.4%, and it basically in the port containers, and we saw 1.3% in the decline in the rail freight volumes. On the net operating expenses, Chair, we saw an increase of 1.9%. Now this is a net picture, because if you look at the salary increases that we had committed to our employees, it is a bit higher than the 1.9%. However, from the other areas, there was initiatives to try and contain costs, resulting in a net impact of 1.9%. And if I can just also highlight that this is coming from a base where, if you look at 2018, there would have been zero increase altogether. And we then move with an increase of 1.9%. This is an area that we are focusing on still, given the post-COVID environment we're going to have to operate in, basically to look for opportunities to be more efficient without reducing the activity. This then resulted in earnings before interest and tax, which basically indicates the revenue, or rather the cash generation that Transnet at net basis would have delivered, of 34 billion, up 0.7%. And we do look at margins in terms of this ratio, which is a bit down to 45.3 from 45.6. On the net profit line, Chair, what happened is that we show that we still made a decent profit of 3.9 billion rand in the current financial year, or the year ended 2020. However, in comparison to the prior year, this is a 34% decrease. And if you look at the reasons behind that, the 2019 financial year had some fair valuation of assets that we had to do, which basically brought an increase, which was a once-off. And therefore, if you normalize the numbers and remove that, which was that one particular year, year on year, we see a drop of 2.5, excluding that, but it's still a profit for the year. As indicated, some of the challenges that we see, it is the sluggish economic growth, which does challenge the volume movement, but also issues around the GCE mentioned some of the theft issues that we are dealing with that does affect the speed at which we are able to deliver and move goods. Chair, we continued to invest in the business, capital expenditure of 18.6 billion, which is a 3.5% increase from the prior year. And this capital investment, we split it into how much we would have used to maintain the assets, which is about 15 billion, and basically to look for new opportunities and expansion, which was about 3 billion of that number. Much as it is lower than our aspiration in the corporate plan, it is still a significant investment. And Transnet continues to be a cash generative business, having generated 35.9 billion rand. This is a critical number in the context here that we are a self-sustaining business from our internally generated funds. We also work with the capital markets in raising money locally and internationally. And this basically has assisted us in ensuring that we don't look for any support from the shareholder and no guarantees largely in the funding we have. I think the little in our funding that is guaranteed happened around 1999, and the amount is only 3.9 billion, but the cash generation internally is of great assistance in supporting our operations. And that talks then to our gearing ratio, which is at 47.6%. Basically, that is how much our balance sheet has been leveraged to get more activity going. And we also measure the cash interest cover, which was at 2.9 times. Now, this ratio, we've got an agreement with the lenders that we will not go below 2.5. And as it can be seen in this ratio, we are about 0.4 times better than what the lenders expect. In terms of our personnel cost, Chair, we continued to invest in our employees through training. So if you look at our income statement and the money spent on personnel, 2.7% went to training of our artisans, the engineers, as well as the technicians. We are a level 2 BEE entity. And in the current year under review, we spent about 31 billion basically on the measured procurement expenditure, which basically is significant in the context, and we continue opportunities in this area. Chair, in slide number 16, without spending a lot of time on it, this is basically to give a sense of the makeup of our revenue. As GCE indicated, TFR is our significant business and contributed in the last financial year 51% in total of the revenue that we have reported, and the other ODs also operated, contributed, but not at the same level as TFR. But if we look at the volumes at the right-hand side of this slide, we do see that the volumes were fairly flat, both for petroleum as well as the port containers, if you compare year on year, 2019 and 2020. But if you look at the rail volumes, largely on the iron ore as well as coal, fairly flat, which basically does talk to the sluggish economic growth as well. But you then see a distinct decrease year on year when you look at general freight business, where we moved in 2019 about 84.7 million tons, and in 2020 only 81. So that's like over 3 million tons lower than the prior year. And therefore, some of the focus areas are about how we deal with these issues. On the cost elements, we just showed the committee that largely our personnel costs contribute about 57% in our operating costs, followed by the electricity costs. And you would see that when we talk to the period of COVID where we had a complete lockdown, largely our personnel costs are fixed, because as much as we had a lockdown for the significant part of the first half of the year, we continued to keep the employees in our salary bill, and it remained flat in the expenditure for the year. But it's a significant contributor in the bill. In areas of improvement, we are looking to manage overtime. We are looking to manage any discretionary expenditure. I mean, with COVID, we've learned that we don't need to travel as much, and we would basically see some improvement in terms of the cost line. On the next slide, Chair, just to highlight a bit on our balance sheet movement and the assets that we have, much as we see that we've had to invest and increase the value of the assets, with the current impact of the sluggish economic growth, we do see that our assets have actually lost some value, reducing the balance sheet valuation. It's an area that we are also focusing on, because we believe if we can improve on the performance in terms of the volumes, the balance sheet would be impacted positively as well. Chairperson, if I quickly move to the funding, as I indicated that we fund on the strength of our balance sheet. Over the past financial year, we've managed to raise from capital markets about 11.8 billion, and we repaid 13 billion in the financial year. And all the due, the amounts that were due to our lenders, we paid as required. We continue to work with the lenders, even in the context of COVID, to basically ensure that we align and we strengthen the relationship to grow the economy. In terms of the rating, we work with Moody's as well as S&P as our rating agencies, and Chair, we have frequent conversations with them. Recently, we've had a visit, and really it is basically to engage and give them a sense of comfort that the lender's money is safe with Transnet, and we continue to have such engagements. And you would see that in terms of the Moody's, we are largely at the level, in fact, both the sovereign rating, but they do look at us as a standalone, and therefore the conversations are always ongoing with the rating agencies. I would like to just spend a minute or so, Chair, on the PFMA requirements and the qualification, and we have put slide 21 just to make the committee align with us on that. We are quite aware of our responsibility in terms of the PFMA requirements, that we should at all times prevent any fruitless, wasteful expenditure, manage any criminal conduct, and put controls in place to manage any PFMA reportable irregularities. And it is an area of focus, and I think the chairperson started commenting that if you look at the financial statements of Transnet, the reasons that we are qualified is that the auditors were not comfortable that we have reported all the irregular expenditure that has occurred. And Chairperson, this is an issue that comes from as early as 2018, when the first qualification of Transnet financial statements happened. And at that point in time already, the board, working with management, put together a remedial plan to try and manage the issues around what caused this irregular expenditure. Chairperson, the remedial plan has actually assisted to identify the issues and the causes, and a lot of work has happened. And you would see that if you compare the financials of Transnet 3 years back to the financials of Transnet in 2020, significant reporting has happened, and significant amount of irregular expenditure has been reported. But important to highlight is that this irregular expenditure, as required, is dating as far back as 2012, as some of the issues that would not have been reported in the past needed to be reported when the auditors raised the issues. And we continue to look for strengthening our controls and making sure that we report to ensure that we can rid ourselves of this continuing qualification. So the remedial plan assisted greatly, but it was not nearly enough to identify everything that needed to be identified for the auditors to be comfortable that we have reported all the issues. What we have done, Chair, if I can highlight some of the issues and progress made, is that, as GC indicated, we now have a fully populated executive structure with permanent employees, whilst in the past there was a number of acting positions, and that assists in giving accountability to everybody and ensuring everybody takes accountability to watch out for PFMA issues. Also, the chief procurement and all these matters around PFMA emanate from procurement processes. So we now have a procurement officer, but also we have removed the reporting lines from finance to strategy in terms of the procurement role that assists us to strengthen the segregation of duties. The chief internal auditor is another critical role because for the longest time, Transnet had outsourced this service, which is quite critical as a third line of defense before the auditors come. And a lot of work is going to happen to assist us in this area, Chair. And lastly, if I can just highlight as well that in strengthening these controls, we are looking for automation opportunities to ensure that we can improve the speed of identifying these issues and improving on them, but also the training of our employees to understand, because there's been lots of changes and new people leaving, coming in, while some people have left the organization. So there's a lot of focus to basically improve and strengthen the internal control and oversight in this area. Chair, as a result, we still have a qualification, but it is our endeavor to basically get out of that space. And lastly, as indicated by the GCE, for 2021, we are still in a closed period as our financials are being reviewed by the Auditor General. We are working towards releasing them before we close for the December break. The performance itself will be driven really by the post-COVID and the closure that we experienced largely in the first quarter. But we will come to the committee with more details as soon as we've gone through our internal governance processes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Are you done, Transnet?
Yes, Chair, we are done with the presentation. Chair, if I may, we were also just wanting to give a little bit of time. Should the other board members on the call I'd like to make a few statements as well.
I think you're allowed to do any part that you feel you have not properly presented, or if there are any other people who want to add something. I think we can give you that time. Unless you want now to get the questions, and then perhaps you expand from there. But if you still have areas where you think you still need to put more flesh, I can allow you.
No, on our side, Chair, as the executive, we are fine. Sorry.
No, I was just thinking maybe as board members, we will assist in responding to the questions should the need arise.
Okay. Thank you. Honorable members, that's where we are now. I think we have received this comprehensive presentation presented by the Transnet team, can we engage? I will do as I normally do, take people according to the list I have in front of me. With immediate effect, I will ask Honorable Gumede to kickstart.
Chair?
Yes, sir.
Am I audible?
Yes, you are loud and clear.
Sir, I won't have much to ask. Firstly, is I wish to accept and note the report and further say it wasn't bad, as one would in fact have expected. I'm as well impressed with the programs that they are undertaking as the entity, as well as that they seem to be up to date with the repayments. There are, however, a bit of concern, Chair, that on the side of irregular expenditure. I was a bit worried. I counted the years, that it's almost 8 years that this thing started in 11-12, that is 2011-2012. My worry is, why didn't whether the internal or the auditor could not pick it up until it was established in 2018. It's a bit of concern. We don't want to lose faith on internal auditors as well as the external, because if all this was happening year after year in terms of procurement, that's not, in fact, a good thing. I think that's the concern that one will have. As well as the other concern comes from, it's still in the same year, the elements of the state capture. That's the one that, in fact, I would like to find out from the entity, that how can they contain it as well. The most things that are worrying the entity, it's more on theft as well as moving from road to rail. Otherwise, Chair, I'm quite satisfied with the report. It's promising. I hope they won't kind of regress. It's a forward ever, backward never, so that they always remain. We just wish that because of the programs that they have, we take this entity as one which is amongst the ones that we prioritize. We are not saying that we are not prioritizing others. The main fear that we have as a committee is a situation where we don't want to be the victims of a committee that would have killed the SOEs. But it will have a very better legacy, in a sense that if all those that the weak entities become stronger in our presence, that's a good legacy that we leave, Chair. Otherwise, I'm happy.
Honorable Gumede, in the absence of Honorable Kachalia, can I have Honorable Mare?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just must look forward for Khalebi's apology. He has two other very urgent meetings to attend this morning. I just want to highlight two issues as well, as my previous colleague has said here on the committee. It's all about the recovery of funds from illegal contracts approved as far as state capture is concerned, as we had at the previous committee the long hours of engaging with people from Transnet and Eskom, and if the CEO can highlight some of those, what precautions has been taken to prevent this in future again, and what amounts did we recover. Then secondly, I just want to highlight this whole project coming now a long way, that's Road to Rail, and it's all about cost and time for the clients. Will Transnet be able to really compete with heavy transport in South Africa on the roads? Will it be cost-wise for a client to actually go road to rail for his products to be delivered at another point? And as you all know, we're actually struggling at this point in time with for our main road in South Africa, and it is caused by heavy transport on those roads, that the roads is iterating in a fast lane. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mare. I hope the Transnet team has captured what you said, because when you were speaking, you were sort of losing a lot of... Hello, who's that? I think there was somebody coming in. Okay, let's go to Honorable Komani or Mawotwe. Mawotwe, yes. Are you there?
Must I repeat?
And you can only repeat, Honorable Mare, if your signal will improve from the previous one.
I can do it quickly, with a few words, if needed.
Yeah.
In short, it's about the road to rail. If we will be cost-effective versus heavy transport companies, will it be effective? Will Transnet be effective as far as cost is concerned? And time, because that is what's essential for any client making use of Transnet for that purpose. And secondly, did we get right to get funds back that's been contracted illegally approved as far as state capture is concerned? Thank you.
Okay, that was better. Thank you, Honorable Mara. Honorable Maotwe. Komani. Okay. Let's go to Honorable Mkwanazi. Honorable Mkwanazi. Honorable Mkwanazi.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm sorry about the delay.
Okay.
I want to also come after Baba Okumete in supporting the report. We really appreciate the comprehensive report presented by Transnet. Chairperson, I only have, I think, two. One is any sufficient appropriate step taken against the officials who has incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure, if they can elaborate on that, on the financial side. Secondly, Chair, I would love to get from the board members, if possible, if they are they're in attendance. So what corrective actions are they taking? Are they taking against the non-performance in the shareholders' compact? That will be all from me, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhwanazi. Honorable Buthelezi. Inkosi Buthelezi? Ayikho. Okay. Honorable Kwangwa? Honorable Kwangwa? Naya ke. Okay. Go back to Piri. Honorable Piri.
Thanks, Chair. I hope I'm audible, but let me start by let me start by apologizing if my background must be bad. I mean, an event of my constituents, maybe for the sound it's loud, but I've tried to get inside the car. But let me also join and greet members and officials, also board members of Transnet, and go straight to the question. Or let me start by, Chair, trying to applaud the department under these circumstances, economic challenges of COVID-19. They have really overcome and worked well as an SOE rather than other SOEs, but let me join colleagues to applaud them and say we are really proud and they must keep it up. But Chair, on the basis of procurement and contract, we are observing the same sequence that has happened last year, to say they are a document that they are required by the auditors and they are not found. But we are just saying to the department or the Transnet, what is it that you are doing to address these challenges that you are not your document are not found in time when they are needed by the AG? And I'm also covered by Honorable Mkhwanas on the issue of non-performance in the shareholders' compact. Let me pause this, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Thierry. Honorable Shabalala.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Let's appreciate the presentation that was done, well presented by Memola. I think she represents very well. Look, this is the financial performance. There is a bit of concern in there. One, I want to immediately go to issues that perhaps the committee would want to register specifically to corrective actions that Transnet had taken in addressing what the auditor deemed as effective steps that were not taken to prevent fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounting to 108 million 2019 to 484 million as disclosed in note 39 of the consolidated and separate financial statements as required by sections, and I don't want to quote the sections of PFMA, you will know that the majority of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure was caused by poor contract management and inappropriate delegation of authority. Second part to that is that the consequence management, and this is what also the auditor says, that they were unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence that disciplinary steps were taken against officials who had incurred irregular expenditure as required by Section 51 of PFMA and its subsections. This was due to proper and complete records that were not maintained as evidence to support investigations into irregular expenditure. And furthermore, it says disciplinary steps were not taken against some of the officials who had incurred or permit Section 5 of the PFMA. So the point there that is made is that the disciplinary proceedings that were not taken on board, I want to know why and what is it that we're going to do, because part of this report speaks about the irregular fruitless wasteful expenditure. We're really worried about it. If there's deviations, you need to tell us, but we want to find out what is it that you're going to do. Then there's methods on procurement and contract management that sufficient appropriate audit evidence could not be obtained for three contracts that were awarded in accordance with the legislative requirements. As management indicated that one of the contracts, the information was requested from a storage service provider, but documents could not be located, and for the other two contracts, the information could not be found. Similar non-compliance was also reported in the prior year. The question becomes, what is Transnet doing to address this finding? Secondly, what corrective action is Transnet taking against non-performance in the shareholder compact? That brings me to just want to say, moving forward, perhaps people like your chief procurement officer by the name of Burezani Nemukura, it will be important to interact such, including the audit executive Brian Komu, including the group chief executive, of course, Ms. Portia. And now that's part of the leadership and part of this fruitless expenditure we want to hear. But what is the moving forward? What is that we're going to do to contain such things that we don't see them happening? But what's happened with these three contracts and information that was not required? Now, Transnet, in its report, it says that it wants to invest $153.5 billion, and the challenges around rail, port, and pipeline. Now, the question is that this is part of those infrastructure plans that we saw where President speaks about the recovery plan. I want to know what is that we're going to do to avoid irregular expenditure. But second to that, the issue of interstandard is very prudent and crucial. Are we going to see more on local companies benefiting insofar as this billion that you want to invest, and what guarantees do we have? Somewhere in the report it speaks about BBBE where you complied about 1.2%, if not 2%. What is the status quo moving forward? We know the issues of the court order around that. However, because we are reporting on this financial year, I want to know moving forward how we're going to deal with this. The aim in improving performance and increasing the volume of freight transported by rail, if you can expand on this. So the department is investigating the implications of giving effect to the National Ports Act of course of 2005, and the volume transported on rail by Transnet having decreased from 226.3 million tons in 2017 and 18 to 215.1 million tons in 2018-19. If you can also expand on that, I'm very much interested to understand it. And there is parts where you speak about the company having had generated some profits of 6.6 billion 2018. There's lots of financial year that you account for. I just want to know, as much as we would have generated all this net profit, to what end does it really benefit the operations and the challenges that we're having at this point? The part on infrastructure dilapidation, if not issues of corrupt elements that we saw the spilling, what are we going to do really? And have you engaged with transport, especially around the security of this matter? Is there any plan? By now, we should be able to have any plan if we're going to invest in this infrastructure as we move forward. If you don't really have to go to detail, you can even give it to us in writing. But I think it's very important that we would want to monitor, and as part of oversight board, to make sure that we do that. Now, when you were reporting, or rather presenting, you spoke about private sector, that you want to approach the shareholder. I'm not sure, was it in the port where you are experiencing challenges? I want to know, what is your intention of approaching the shareholder or cabinet for you? Because you said you want to approach them to enhance the issue of private participation. What is your intention? intention when you want that private participation? Is there any conditions that you're thinking about to whose benefit it's going to benefit, and at what percentages we are looking at, if you'll be able to share that with us? The last point is on the training. I think you are training about 2.7% of labor cost was spent, in fact, in the report, on training, that you were focusing on artisans, engineers, and engineering technicians. So I want to know, where are they? All those people that you are counting, that you are training, where are they? Can they be traced? Where are they located? And I'll tell you, because of this high youth unemployment that we've seen, and the report covers this, we are proud of Transnet. We have a future in Transnet, and that is no doubt about it. In fact, once we see it performing even more. But what are we doing with all this training and investing so much money on it? It is something else to train and bring people inside the industry, but if they cannot come back again in the market, or rather you are able to, your investment should be able to see value for it. I think for me it's very, very important that you see that happening. But really my biggest worry as well is on the theft, the scale of amount of this theft, even on issues of petroleum, where are we around that? If you can really assist us. I mean, we know our economy is very weak, and the report cites cumulative irregular expenditure that we're seeing over time. But what are the positive proposals that you can really give us and put on paper for us to consider? Thank you so much, Sir President.
Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Let's go to the Transnet team.
Honorable Chair, thank you. I request that Nonkululeko Sandra Kufir maybe also answer some of the ones, especially the ones that have to do with the cases. I'm not sure, Chair, given the fact that you chair of the board, you need to leave earlier. Would you like to answer any questions that relate to the board? Chair. Honourable Chair, will continue. Any board member, I don't know if we've lost connection.
Sorry, but the Chair is still online. Perhaps let's continue. He will come in whatever time he is getting
okay.
An opportunity to do so.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I will ask Nonkululeko to deal with Honorable Gumede's questions, as they had a lot to do with the PFMA and performance.
Thank you, Koshia. So just maybe on the PFMA related questions, and I note that it's a matter that kind of cuts across through all the committee members' questions. Chair, it is an issue that pains us a lot and concerns us a lot to find ourselves with a 3-year in a row qualified audit opinion and on one and the same issue. And I think because Advocate Sophia is on the line, I would like to give off to her as well to add some comments. So, Chair, to the point that's been made, these issues seem to date back as far as 2011, 2012. However, our reporting approach was not strong. So these things occurred, but we never reported. And as the 2018, in Transnet, there was a number of changes, including the start of the new board, which was around May 2018. we also view it in some good light, because it actually indicates the strides that were made by the board at the start, but also the start of the AG, because as we understand, the AG started coming closer to Transnet around 2018, and therefore the reporting started to improve. And however, because one could say it was not, it was largely neglected or not given the focus it required in 2012. What it has done is that as we started to report in 2018-19, it's the backlog that is causing the issue of the qualification. Because, Chair, if you look at the new contracts that have been placed since the starting of reporting in 2018, we do see quite a difference in what we are reporting, in that there is the placement of the new contracts is much more compliant. And therefore, going forward, what we do expect to see is that if any reporting has to happen, it will relate to legacy contracts. Because Transnet, by the nature of its business, our contracts are fairly long-term. So we do have contracts that stay open for 5 to 7 years. However, as we know the requirements of PFMA, we have to report as we incur the expenditure. And therefore, if we didn't catch the contract as irregular in 2014, 2015, but we continue to incur the expenditure in that contract in 2020, 2021, we have to report that expenditure as irregular in the year. And therefore, you will note that we have continued to reopen the prior year balances to try and report what comes from prior years. And Chair, we have indeed set ourselves up as a team to basically strengthen the controls, try and automate more, but also ensure that the new contracts are less non-compliant, whilst we focus as a team on identifying all the legacy contracts that might have irregular expenditure, and it is quite a task for us, but we have set ourselves up to deal with it. On the comments around the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I do want to highlight that as well. It's an issue that we don't want to see happening. And in the context of trying to deal with consequences, and Sandra will comment on that, we have a process that Expo must get a monthly report from the OBs on the consequence management. And some of the consequences management requires training, which is why we are highlighting that the training is going to be a significant part of our work. So in terms of what we see on page 128 of our financials, which talks to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Chair, I do want to highlight that, in fact, it is still high at 108 million, but it is an improvement compared to the 2019 number, which was a 484 million. So we continue to focus on ensuring that the fruitless and wasteful expenditure year on year is monitored and reduced. I'm going to just ask Sandra to comment on some of the activity in relation to consequence management and the work she's doing to deal with what has been picked up.
Thank you, Nonkululeko, and good morning, honorable members. I will speak to, as Nonkululeko had indicated, some of the initiatives that we're undertaking as part of the consequence management. As honorable members had alluded, it's not just a matter of taking disciplinary action and recovery of losses, but also training and to ensure a prevention and an arrest of root causes that lead to the irregular expenditure. So in that regard, we are updating our course material with regard to PFMA and triple PFMA training, and the training will be rolled out across the business, across all employees of the business, as an annual mandatory initiative. That's on the preventative side. Nonkululeko has also spoken about the improvement in controls,
both on the financial and on the procurement side, to prevent a recurrence of irregular expenditure. What we must recognize, however, is that some of the expenditure that occur year on year that emanate from a single procurement event, which involved some irregularity, will continue to be reported as irregular expenditure unless, one, the contract is terminated, or two, the expenditure is condoned by the National Treasury. Now, in relation to some of those contracts, especially those where there has been no fruitless and wasteful expenditure, operational requirements dictated that we have to continue with expenditure against those contracts. And some of the irregularities in some of the contracts are not necessarily that material, but speak to non-compliance in terms of reporting, for instance, to the CIDB with regard to the percentage participation in subcontracts. So it does not necessarily mean that each event of irregular expenditure necessarily results in fruitless and wasteful expenditure and involve fraud and corruption. What we are doing is we are through the process of ensuring line by line with regard to all of our current contracts that we can clearly determine whether each event of irregular expenditure would have involved fruitless and wasteful expenditure and would have involved fraud and corruption. That is a process that we are embarking on in batch form with a view to completing the exercise before we enter into the next financial year. And I wish to refer honourable members to National Treasury Instruction Note 2 of May 2019, which creates the instrument whereby state-owned companies can apply for condemnation, thus the pardoning of an action, a procurement event or a failure to report, whatever that may be, for that to be pardoned and for the to stop the continuation of irregular expenditure. We are in the process, as Nonkululeko had indicated, of detecting all the irregular expenditure, which the auditors have indicated was not necessarily complete. But for National Treasury to condone that action of irregular expenditure, Transnet must also show that we've completed the investigatory processes that would transparently disclose fraud and corruption, and that would transparently disclose the disciplinary action as well as the recovery of losses and the referral of criminal complaints in relation to an irregular expenditure where it is applicable. We are intensifying, as Transnet, our collaboration with all the law enforcement agencies to improve our ability to follow through on disciplinary action, the recovery of losses, and criminal prosecutions. We've established a strategic coordination forum with all of these agencies to and we meet on a regular basis to ensure that our combined efforts achieve traction in giving effect to our obligations to ensure that we get these irregular expenditures also condoned by the National Treasury. I think it's also an opportune time to give feedback to honourable members that over the financial year under discussion, Transnet has already taken disciplinary action against 14 senior managers, most of whom had already left the organization. Some of the disciplinary action is still under due process, either through arbitration or at the labor court, but that is underway. Honorable members may have also noted reports this week with regard to the assets of one of those executives having been seized by the SIU. That action is a very good example of the results that we are showing in our collaboration with the SIU. That whole process was co-managed by Transnet and the SIU. So through the intensified activities with the SIU and other law enforcement agencies, Transnet will, in the coming months, intensify its recovery of losses, disciplinary action, and referral of criminal proceedings. Thank you, Nonkululeko. I hope that satisfies, but I'm open for further questions. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Nonkululeko, Chairperson Postia had wanted me to say something. I was struggling with, for some reason, I had technical problems this side. I just want to add to what Sandra is saying, just one aspect. We were asked the question, have you recovered any monies? How much have you recovered? We reported previously, and we said so also at the Zondo Commission and in public, that we have recovered 618 million from China South Rail, which was money that was paid to them in advance. And of course, we were due to recover another 180 million from regiments. Unfortunately, an action to liquidate them was instituted before we got our money. But that claim continues. It's something that Sandra and the team at NPA, SIU, and the Hawks would deal with. We had also issued letters of demands to a number of executives with regard to those monies that we believe the company lost as a result of their gross negligence. But there are other monies that are being pursued. I know the GCE and the team are continuing to engage, for example, with regard to those matters that relate to the interest swaps pertaining to the monies of the pension fund and monies that Transnet itself had lost. It's a subject of continuous engagement, but we are pursuing these matters. Chairperson, that's all I want to say, and I'd like, if it pleases the chairperson, to please be excused so that I can go to the next meeting.
Yes, you are released, Dr. Popomolefe. Thank you so much for your presence.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair.
And your contribution. Thank you. We are still continuing listening to the responses.
Chairperson, this is Gratitude Rampaga, a board member. There was also a question raised on the non-performance against the shareholder impact. I think at the beginning of the meeting, Portia introduced an almost new management team. That is testament to the board's determination to address non-performance. And we are working with a new team to ensure that whatever goals are set from the shareholder department are met. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair, can we, sorry?
Nobody interrupted you.
Oh, okay.
So it's on the issue of roads, rail. If I may, I might even sort of like touch on some of the questions that are linked to even the issue of private sector participation, if I may, Chair. Road to rail, well, it's possible within a certain limit. Remember, in the end, rail is competitive relative to road at any distance greater than 300 kilometers. Less than 300 kilometers, the road is more competitive than it makes sense, and it's difficult for railways to be able to compete against road. In our case, the regulation in South Africa has meant that road actually doesn't carry full cost. So its pollution, its actual impact on road. So in the end, because it doesn't pay its full cost, it becomes a much cheaper option. That's one, but let's pass that and come back to the next issue, which we don't often talk about. When in the recent while, when the president issued the statement around allowing private sector access to the transport to the TFR system, look, we're still trying to understand what that means. But the long and the short of it, when we started talking to some of the companies who are anxious to participate, the only thing we have said to them was, happiness that you come and you participate in the system, but please understand that you have to belong to the same bargaining council that we belong to, because one of the issues that we all have to deal with is the cost, the structure of the labor industry that we compete in, that we operate in. They need to belong to the same structure, because effectively if we don't ensure that that's the case, we would have left ourselves basically having to compete with people whilst we tie back one of our hands behind our back, and that just is insane. Because in principle, the ownership of the state and the ownership of the private sector is of no fundamental consequence. As far as how we in the end operate, we should not be anti-competitive in our behavior. Completely agree with that. And so very much comfortable whenever people take us to the court, competition commission, and then we get tested in that process on whether we are uncompetitive, anti-competitive or not. However, if the private sector is going to play in the same space that we play in, they must play by the same rules that we play. They should not be safe to have special rules. So, Honourable Member, I want to, Shabalala, when you asked the question about the conditions for private sector participation, absolutely clear that on the risk and reward side, we cannot have the old-fashioned situation where the public sector takes all of the risk, so we socialize the risk and we are responsible, and the private sector privatizes the rewards. That just can't happen, and it's insane to do a thing like that. And so we'd be pushing back that there should be a fair share between risk and reward in the process. And frankly, if we're not able to get to equity in as far as that's concerned, our view is that Transnet or the state should continue to be the provider of the service, and then you use the regulator. We are firm supporters of the economic regulatory bill that the Department of Transport is planning to implement, because it is one way to ensure that whenever people feel that any of our entities, including TFR, has been unfair, you can take us under review with the transport regulator. So I think for what we are sure about, though, so that we are not seen as if we are anti-private sector participation, we know for a fact that there would be greater dynamism even on our side if there were other players in the system, for sure. We know that there would be more jobs actually created if there were other people in the system, because as I indicated to you, honourable members, our problem is not a demand problem. Our problem in part is a supply problem at the end of the day. I will tell you that at some point during the worst of COVID, Velile and I, CEO of TPT, had a chat, and we said, damn, we might, we might have been in a better position. They are saying the shower because I use words. we would be in quite a lot of, in a much stronger position if we had had other private operators, either in terminal, in the containers, because then we might have been able to have a call-a-friend situation where we might have been able to ask someone else to come and help us in some of our operations.
True, we did reach out to the private sector, and to be honest, a lot of companies did come to support us. But the robustness of the system is fundamentally improved if we are able to have other players. Honourable members, I do want to go back to a little bit to this issue of irregular expenditure. Because what we often don't contrast properly, there's the one monster, which is irregular expenditure. To my mind, the bigger monster actually is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. When you have irregular expenditure, it's not like you didn't get the thing. There isn't value that was created. We may have contravened Transnet's own procedures, and hence the whole comprehensive review that we've undertaken, and we are in the process of undertaking of procurement, so that we simplify the very same processes and procedures that we have to follow in Transnet, so that it's easy for all of our people to comply firstly. But sometimes we contravene the CIDB rules, right? And the CIDB rules say that 30% of every tender that we have must be to smaller companies. I'm sorry, members, I don't remember what is the minimum amount from which size tender. That's fair enough, and we need to address that and resolve. And then sometimes we contravene the PFMA. Now, on contravening the PFMA, and this I'm still talking fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I want to reflect on the case which we have, which finally we had to sort of like face squarely which monster we're going to deal with. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which we believe is even bigger because that's expenditure which has no return to the operation whatsoever, or irregular expenditure, where you then contravene the office of the Chief Procurement Officer. Now, if you look at the PFMA, under Section 54, there is a requirement that the shareholder must return to you with an answer in 30 days. On the Chief Procurement Officer, there is no requirement that they must report to you in 30 days. Now, you are a commercial enterprise. In the situation that we're facing where we're going to be forced to compete with the private sector, they have no PFMA. They have no Office of the Chief Procurement Officer that they must comply with. They are just in the market to make sure that they win that business and they win it as fast as possible. In our case, if we do not get a response from the Chief Procurement Officer in a month, in 2 months, in 3 months, in 4 months, in 5 months, we can do nothing until we get, because we run the risk of irregular expenditure. So members, we've got 208 locomotives which are waiting to date so that we can get permission to go and buy space before we can be able to move them. Now, remember I said our problem is not demand, it's supply. If we were able to move the 208 locals, we would suddenly be able to meet the demand that we have, at least to the extent that we are not dealing with cable theft on the one hand, and to the extent that we are not dealing with other operational efficiencies, because I also don't want to create the impression that that's our only problem. But I just want members to understand that real life is a little bit harder when you're trying to balance out irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So Nonkululeko was just reminding me that I should come back on that, is that the irregular expenditure that we definitely need to find a long-term solution for is that package that is tied up with the, what shall we call, the state capture years, the 1064s, and all of that. We need to resolve on that one, absolutely. But there's the irregular expenditure where we have to face the monster of, you either have fruitless and wasteful, or you have irregular. And in the future, we're going to have to be balancing out the fact that the private sector is going to eat our lunch, and we need to make sure that we do something. So more often than not, when our customers are mad with us, they're mad with us because we're not reliable. And we're not reliable because we have these other things that we have to be responding to. One of the issues that I think it was Honourable Member Piri who asked about this thing about documents that were not readily available for the auditors. I think Nonkululeko has answered that question in part, but it also is tied up with the modernization of our IT systems and our IT processes. Another issue, when we arrived, we found that there had been a complete outsource of our IT systems, and it's only now with the CIO that we've started
rebuilding the capability so that we can be able to have at least a hybrid model where we have some services provided by third parties, because there's actually some value in having that, but also there's some internal capacity. Among the major projects that we have is the establishment of a shared services center, which would then ensure that we finally make electronic all of this documentation. Is it going to be easy? No. Is it going to be fast? No. We anticipate that this is probably a three-year exercise. And I think Nonkululeko has already indicated, on our contracts, we have like 13,000 contracts that we have to review, both for are they irregular, number one, and number two, are we paying the right price? Are we paying the price that the market pays, or have we paid a Transnet premium? One of the things that we started as soon as Vuleni Makhula started was to actually immediately indicate to the market that we would no longer be buying from third parties, middlemen and the rest and the like, but that we would buy directly from manufacturers. That ties up, Honorable Member Chabalala's question around how we're making sure that our procurement is beneficial to local industry and local suppliers as well. Is that on the industrialization? Honorable Chair, I think if you gave us a little bit of 6 months, because we're starting to work with our R&D unit, which we find actually quite significant, and actually quite a significant amount of money that we spend in that area. And our R&D teams actually have a very deep knowledge of the capability in South Africa, and are actually very interested in actually supporting small, medium enterprises to meet some of our quality and standard demands. There's a lot more issues to discuss around that. Happy to have a separate discussion about some of the things that we are finding and some of the necessary changes that we are making so that we can genuinely have a procurement system and an operating model that has a stimulatory effect on industry. I think I've answered most. Oh, and the question around TFR volumes going down, it's a problem, partly, Chair, as a result of the MDS of a few years ago. It had forecast a much higher economic growth rate than what has turned out to be the case. And so the investments were way above the forecast growth rate that had been anticipated. And so the volume that we thought we would get never arose. And so what Caesar and her team, as well as Andrew, are doing is sort of like getting to a point where we understand what is the total capacity that the system has, and then on the back of what's the total capacity the system has, what is the volume that we would be able to meet, given these constraints of local availability and cable theft, whilst we improve operational effectiveness. I think I'd like to... and then the issue, the one question that we asked about training. So we train a lot. Apologies, members. Honorable members. We train a lot, but we don't train enough. And when I say we don't train enough, we could train much, much more given the installed capacity that we have. So, for example, TE has about 22 training centers right throughout the country, and we've just never been able to utilize the 3,000 seats that we have on an annual basis. And given the issue of unemployment that we have, we're also quite clear that an urgent need is to create skills where people are able to use their hands. Now, unfortunately, our position is that we actually don't create most of those jobs inside Transnet. We're already at 56,000, generally right across the board. We are of the view that we are significantly overstaffed, so we cannot absorb much more. But what we want to ensure is that we train at a level that as other players come into the system, they're able to find skilled personnel. We have recently appointed a senior executive whose job it is to consolidate all of our training capacities under a Transnet Training Academy so that we would be able to get to a point where we optimize our truly substantial training budget, because we have set a target that we want to remain at the level 2 BEE. That means that we've got to spend here around 800 million rand
on all of the training, both for internal people and the training that we want to make available for external staff. So some of them we've employed. Many of them, unfortunately, we've not been able to employ directly. And then the issue of dilapidated infrastructure, but also cable theft, we are working quite closely with PRASA. At this stage, the CEO of PRASA and the CEO of TFR are the two coordination points of all of the issues that we have to deal with between ourselves and PRASA, but also to see how we might be able to improve security on the system so that we deal with cable theft. However, both organizations have had to look at how we deploy and what's our security strategy. Where do we hire our own? How do we hire outsourced security company as well? But also, what's the extent and the usage of technology? Since we've started deploying drones on an active basis, we've actually been having quite a significant amount of successes in the arrest both of cable theft and also in the area of fuel theft. Honorable Chair, I think I have covered most, if not all, according to my side and on our side.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ms. Debbie. Can we perhaps check if there is any follow-up, quick follow-up, honorable members? I'm checking the okay, Shabalala.
Right, thank you so much, Chairperson. I don't think it's necessarily a follow-up, just to comment, really, just parting short. I hear what Sandra says around, and of course what Pusha says on the fruitless, wasteful expenditure, and what are the challenges there. And she draws our attention to note two around part of the options applying to Treasury for condemnation. However, I still want Sandra perhaps also pay attention to that note 39, where issues of separate financial statements that are required. And that's where majority of this fruitless, wasteful expenditure it's there. But part of it, what is highlighted, is poor consolidation, poor contract management rather, and inappropriate delegation of authority. And there's something within the peril that they can fix. And I think, Sandra, it's something that we need to do perhaps moving forward. And I hear what Pusha says around, you know, the private sector and the issues of your locomotives and how they participate. And of course, they're not under the Treasury, not only Treasury, but the PFMA. So at times, you might not get, you know, the responses you need from the Chief Financial Procurement Officer. But I think it's something for us to correct so that when we come back for the third financial year, and at least we don't have this a qualified audit opinion. I think you can do it and your team can do it. You've seen where's the problem and we understand the reporting line is something that must be clear to Treasury so that they don't find you qualified audit or things that at times you don't have much control over and you are able to submit in writing so there's the reasons where you are because it's not a good state of affairs to have qualified audit opinions over the three financial years, if not two. So I think it's very important when we come back to this committee, we can only hope that as when we come, we'll be celebrating with you the unqualified audit and one has confidence that it's something that can be done. Pusha, on the matter of private equity partner, and that's why President, and when he spoke to the recovery plan about downscaling, or rather for us to be able to look into this investment, as much as we are committed to that, I'm happy when you say that you have approached that, and I like how you put it, is that the real part of the reasons why is that the issue of risk and reward, there must be a fair share around that, so that you don't only carry the burden as the state on the risk, but also the private sector, the same investment is able to also carry the risk associated with that. For myself, Chairperson, I think what's important is for us just to have a bit of a
equity partnership that we're able to make. As much as there are many that would have came, let's have transparency so that we're able to do oversight with yourselves as in the, when they happen, then we don't find ourselves at the back foot of all these matters. I think for me, I like how you put it. What is the reason why you would want that? That's something that I would have wanted you to elaborate, and you've done that. The issues of jobs, and that is very important. I think, Chairperson, let me leave it at that. It's not safe to say that I am really confident, and thank you so much for sharing the entire leadership. I think you're doing very well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Shabalala, is there anyone want to just have a final bite we give back to the Transnet team?
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Kumari?
No, Chair, I just want to comment on it's not minor, but it's serious. It shouldn't have come from the group CEO that the irregular spending is better than the fruitless. You know, because at times we may interpret that as done delivering. Financially, yes, according to what she says, it's better. But it's not something that you can stand on a platform and say it's better because the money is not lost. But at the end of the day, it does impact on the perhaps your assessment in terms of the Auditor General. So I'm saying you keep it because it happens by, well, coincidentally, not that we are aiming to do it, but when you come to defend it, then it's not a correct thing. So that's the only thing I wanted to comment on. Maybe true, we're debating it as well on the other previous discussion, that when you say the money is lost, what exactly do you mean in as far as the fruitless expenditure and all those things? So it may start with the irregular, and then it may end up being something else. So that's the only thing I wanted to comment on. Thank you very much.
Okay. If there is no one else who would like to say something, I will have to give to Ms. Debbie for final wrap-up of this contribution.
Honourable Chair, if I may.
Yes, I've given you.
Oh, okay, thanks. I wasn't sure. So I do want to come back to the point that Honourable Kumete sort of makes, raises. So that we are clear, we manage the irregular expenditure as much as we manage the fruitless and wasteful expenditure one. Number two, as a Schedule 2 company, we actually borrow money not just in South Africa, we borrow it globally. We are constantly dealing with the problem, and in fact, sadly, even in South Africa, by the way, that many people don't understand what irregular expenditure is. They see irregular expenditure as if it was some fraudulent transaction. So one of the things that we've been talking to Treasury and we've raised with the AG is that maybe there's an argument that it's not about, we want to make full disclosure and be completely transparent on all of those issues to and report instead to Parliament as a special reporting requirement on what's unfruitful and irregular, but no longer include that in our annual financial statements because fruitless, we'll report directly whatever fruitless is, because fruitless is something funny that happens. But irregular expenditure is, as I indicate, Chair, is that we have to compete in the market. We have customers who are supposed to get products. Now, you cannot give us a mandate that says reduce the cost of logistics, move cargo in South Africa, because when we don't move cargo in South Africa, we actually bottleneck the economy. So the point that I was trying to make so that the honourable member is clear is that we are
organization which is completely compliant. But we also have to be able to deliver on that, on that other dimension, which is our core mandate. So as a leadership team, in fact, we would really appreciate to have a session with the committee in camera, and we just talk you through some of the challenges that we face, and especially as we're going to a situation where we're going to bring in private players into the system who do not have to deal with some of the requirements that we're, and bearing in mind, Honorable Chair, some of them actually are listed on the JSE. So the transparency and the reporting requirements that they have are exactly the same as ours. So the intention is not to hide or to lie or anything like that, but the intention is to be upfront and be pretty honest with you with some of the decisions and the choices that have to be made, and the situation that we are caught in. And I know that this is not a special situation that just applies to Transnet. It's the same for all Schedule C's, tools who have to compete or have to provide to the services to the private sector so that the economy is able to grow. Thank you, Chair. But thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present to yourself.
Tosha, can I just come in there also to try and clarify or better highlight what I hear you saying, because we have talked about this. Chairman, this is Mpole Tlape, one of the board members. What in fact our group chief executive is trying to do without saying it out loud is that portfolio committee, we as Transnet need your help in convincing Treasury and to some degree the AG and maybe to another degree the department itself, that sometimes we get into irregular expenditure because of the length of time we have to wait for responses from Treasury, from some other government department or agency or another organization for things that we need to move ahead on. And we are unable to move ahead on because we wait for inordinate lengths of time for some decisions that will help us move on. For instance, if we have a contract coming to end and we need some permissions from Treasury or one other to be able to move with that contract, sometimes the responses are so long in coming that we find ourselves continuing with a contract that, because we need that service or we need that product, and we can't do without it for us to be able to deliver to government. So, Portia, I think that, yes, we do need to ask for a session with the portfolio committee and actively request their assistance in getting over some of the bottlenecks that force the organization into irregular expenditure. Please comment on that.
Yes, I thought Mayor was trying, the board member was trying to ask you, Ms. Debbie, to say something again.
Portia, if you could just say something about some of the things that force us into having fruitless, rather irregular expenditure whilst we're waiting for responses from Treasury or from somebody else.
So, I mean, Honourable Chair, I mean, we have a situation. So with the fuel debt, unfortunately, sometimes they do get it right, that they puncture the pipe itself. When they puncture the pipeline, the oil, the fuel spills, and then it creates an environmental hazard. Now, we never had as many as we have now. So, as I speak to you now, we've exceeded the budget, but the period of the contract is until March, I think, next year, 2021. So we write to Treasury because unfortunately there's a particular protocol that you have to clear to follow to clear up the spill. And this is as per the National Environmental Management Act. And we write and we indicate we have done everything that we can. We've squeezed everyone that we can. And we remember in TPL we now have a new CEO. We have done and we ask for an allocation on the for the rest of the remaining months. What we then start, because you also, by rules, by the way, you cannot start a procurement process until the previous contract has closed, right? Irrespective of the fact that the money is finished. So we write to Treasury and we say, can we get an additional allocation of funding? I think the additional amount that we had required was just over 168 million rand. We get a response which says you can only spend 50 million rand. Now, what are we to do? We are given 50 million rand. They say we can only spend 50 million rand. That 50 million rand we know will not carry us until the end of March 1. Number two, we know will not do the cleanup that we are obligated under NEMA to undertake. And we also know that we can only appoint a new service provider until after the 31st of March. So what are we to do in a situation like that? So that members understand, it's never taken lightly, is that in a situation like that, it would be, we would be contravening NEMA Act if we don't clear the spillage. But over and above that, remember, some of our spillages happen next to communities. They happen next to areas where children, there's water, there's all kinds of issues that we have to deal with. So we have to worry about the broader societal impact. So it really is a big problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Group Chief Executive, Ms. Pushia Devi, and the team from Transnet. I just want to check if the DG would like to just come in with some few words.
Good afternoon, the Chairperson. Chairperson, what needed to be said has been said. We are quite cognizant of the challenges that Transnet is faced with in rolling back the damage that has been done to the business as reflected in the irregular expenditure that has been reported. There are indeed, as been said, some of the standards that inform how irregular expenditure is reported is an area that of ongoing discussion between ourselves and National Treasury on how those could be changed to ensure that the new team like this one that has come into Transnet is not burdened, so to speak, with the history of the entity, because as long as the contract is in effect, as long as it was declared irregular, any expenditure associated with it would result in irregular expenditure, and that's one of the challenges that the team has been faced with. But we are, from the department, we are pleased with the strides that we see the business taking despite very difficult trading conditions and a very difficult base that had to be addressed by the board before this team came in. And we are quite confident that going forward, we should be coming back with even better results. On that note, we thank you, Chair, and honorable members, for having given us an opportunity to share with South Africans the performance of Transnet in the last financial year. Thank you so much.
Thank you, DG. Also, I would like to say thank you to Transnet for their presentation. I think the committee, if I'm listening to all members of this committee, do appreciate these financial improvements at Transnet, and we hope that the sooner we deal with all the other issues that have been pending for some time, I am
mindful of some of these issues will be resolved at the Zondo Commission, NPA, and so on. I think the sooner those issues are dealt with, the better. And I'm happy that there's no much harm that is happening during our term of office in the 6th Parliament from last year. Most of the wrong actions or activities took place some time ago, and our administration, by the way, is more to do with the mopping up and clean all these problems that has taken place previously. And we don't want to add other problems on top of the problems created by the past administration. Therefore, we would like to see a lot of improvement. That's why our members become sensitive at times with some of the terms that are coming up. We would like to see that commitment, that aggressive commitment from the executive of Transnet, including the entire leadership of Transnet. But we appreciate that. For now, I think they are still doing a good job. Transnet remain our panado currently as compared to other entities, though we must not be too comfortable. I think we must improve so that Transnet can contribute in the improvement of this economy of the country. I think the Transnet is central in that particular responsibility. But also I've taken note of the commitment that has been, I don't know whether it's a promise or a commitment, or we from the side of the group chief executive, when she mentioned that we can have a session in camera to take us through as a portfolio committee into confidence on some of the challenges faced Transnet. I'm looking forward to see us going to that particular session so that we can be in a position to be answered and probe anything, and then the executive is free to tell us and of course put us in confidence on all these, including sensitive matters that are there, so that we can also speak from a position of strength. When you are well informed, you are more empowered to be confident of whatever you say or whatever you are asked, you know, you can be in a position to articulate. Therefore, we are very happy that Transnet remain an example currently, and we don't want to reverse. I must emphasize that we want to go forward. Thank you to the chairperson of this council, including the members of the council, led by Dr. Popo Molefe. We appreciate your presence and your contribution in this session. Without missing anyone, thank you to the staff. Thank you to the honorable members for their contribution. I think they are assisting some of the concerns we are raising as members of the committee. We are not trying to create some unnecessarily hostility or something. We are trying to assist. We are committed to help Transnet to go high, you know, to be a model of our country, to be the best contributor in the fiscus instead of taking from fiscus, you know. With all those words, honorable members, Transnet executive and the board members, the Department of Public Enterprise, and our political leadership, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister in the absentia. Thank you very much. The session is adjourned.
Long live Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Members, and thank you, Honorable Chair. Bye. Long live.
Yes, long live the Chair.
Yeah.